You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Coming up, we'll hear about a surprise historical discovery at the Wisconsin State Herbarium. First, yesterday, North Korea successfully tested an intercontinental ballistic missile that could potentially reach the coast of Alaska. Russia and China issued a joint press statement calling for North Korea to stop its missile and nuclear programs in exchange for the U.S. and South Korea holding off on joint military drills in the future. But within a few hours, the U.S. and South Korea announced that they had held a new military missile drill in response to the North's missile test. Andrew Kidd joins us now to talk about this news and what it could mean for U.S. foreign policy. He's a professor in the Department of Political Science at UW-Madison. Andrew, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on the show.
So how big of a deal is this particular missile test from North Korea?
It's a big deal. It's kind of as big a deal as we choose to make of it. It doesn't actually augment the North Korean capabilities now. They can't do anything today that they couldn't do yesterday. But it shows that they're making progress towards developing a rocket that could hit the United States. This missile that was tested, if it was tested on a flatter trajectory, could hit Alaska and part of Hawaii, and possibly it could be developed to hit the rest of the United States. And if they were able to put a warhead, nuclear warhead, on such a missile, that would represent a serious capability that they don't have now. But right now, they can hit South Korea and they can hit Japan. So it would be a matter of hitting the United States as well as those other two countries.
And what did we hear from the North Korean state media about the missile test?
Well, they have a sort of they have a little sarcastic message for the United States saying, here's a little present for you on the 4th of July to relieve the boredom. So they were kind of trying to tweak our noses a little bit on that, I would say.
And how has the U.S. responded so far? Let's start with U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson.
Well, they've been saying that the message overall for the past couple of weeks and even really going back a couple of months is that the era of strategic patience is over. That's how they're characterizing the Obama policy, which was essentially we're going to wait for the North Korean regime to collapse of its own initiative and then pick up the pieces later on. And they're saying we're not going to do that. But they've also mostly forsworn any negotiations with North Korea. So they're basically left with two tacks. One is trying to have greater sanctions placed upon North Korea. And for that, they needed China's help, and so they've been trying to get China to help. But recently, they've been expressing dissatisfaction with the level of assistance that they've gotten from China in that endeavor, and so they are starting to rattle the saber a bit and make veiled military threats, and some not-so-veiled military threats. And it's an interesting thing to remember that Trump himself, shortly before he was inaugurated, back in January at least, I had mentioned that the North Koreans will not be allowed to develop an ICBM, and this is, of course, just precisely that. So,
intercontinental ballistic missile, right?
Yes, an intercontinental ballistic missile, essentially a missile capable of crossing the ocean and hitting the United States. So this is a direct affront to that statement, and we'll see what the upshot is.
President Trump has called, especially on China in the past, to try to rein in North Korea, thinking that they have more influence there. What has President Trump said in light of this latest test?
Well, he's been increasingly critical of China and their, in his view, inadequate level of pressure on North Korea. And so he is making more belligerent statements. He had a phone call with Xi Jinping, the leader of China, just last Sunday, expressing dissatisfaction with that. And so we're going to see more of that, I think, coming from the White House.
We have a caller, Roland in Eau Claire, on the phone. Let's go there. Hi, Roland.
Good afternoon. I have a suggestion. I think President Trump should go to Congress and ask for a congressional declaration of war, something we haven't done since the 1940s. Once he gets a congressional declaration of war, he can act with North Korea. He could tell North Korea that if they give up their missile program and their nuclear program and they allow UN inspections, then the United States will not attack. But if North Korea refuses and the United States has a right of self-defense, this is the most terrifying threat we've had since the Cuban Missile Crisis when Khrushchev put missiles into Cuba.
All right. Thanks for that call, Roland. And Andrew, what is the congressional role in this?
The congressional role is, well, it's very unlikely to be a declaration of war. We have not declared war, as the caller pointed out, since World War II, despite the fact that we fought Korea and Vietnam, which were substantial wars, and also the various wars in the Middle East, the first Gulf War and the most recent one in 2003. Countries don't declare war anymore. It's an interesting development from international legal perspective. But more broadly, from the congressional perspective, what typically happens is that the president, if they contemplate a major military action, will go to Congress for some sort of authorization, some sort of approval, expression of approval, authorization to use force. And so if Trump was actually serious about using force against Korea, it's conceivable that he might do that. On the other hand, the kind of force that he would probably be contemplating using would be a very short, quick surprise attack on the nuclear facilities and the missile facilities. And so it would forfeit a lot of the advantage of surprise to sort of ratchet up a gradual, long crisis and take it to Congress and have a debate there and get an authorization. It would really make it a lot easier for the North Koreans to hide, dig tunnels, even more tunnels than they already have, hide all their materials, and so basically negate the effect of the strike. So my guess is that he would be advised by his military not to even do that.
We're talking right now with Andrew Kidd, professor in the Department of Political Science at UW-Madison, and we're talking about North Korea's successful test of an intercontinental ballistic missile yesterday that has the potential reach of the coast of Alaska. Andrew, one thing I want to point out is that, you know, this missile reached could potentially reach American soil, but we actually have 28,500 troops, U.S. troops, in South Korea right now, which has been within the range of North Korean traditional missiles or traditional weapons for a long time. Do you anticipate that were the North to move in an aggressive way, would it be against the South and the U.S. presence there, or possibly Japan, which is also much closer, or are they really trying to reach the continental U.S.?
My sense is that the North Koreans are probably not going to launch a first strike, either with conventional weapons, or either with nuclear weapons, or even with conventional weapons, because they know that they would lose the resulting war, and that would be the end of their regime and the end of them personally. So I don't think they're going to do that. What they're building these weapons for almost certainly is for deterrence. That is, in order to try to prevent the United States and South Korea from undermining their regime, taking advantage of any instability that might arise there to move forces in if the regime began to collapse, basically to do what we did in Libya, what we've done covertly in Syria, what we did in Afghanistan, what we did against Saddam Hussein in Iraq, which is to overthrow or help local people overthrow a regime that we don't like. And they know that we don't like them, of course, that's obvious. So they have essentially correct fears that we would like to overthrow their regime, and they think that if you've got nuclear weapons, then you can deter the United States from doing that. Now, the reality is that they've been able to deter the United States since 1994. We contemplated attacking them over the nuclear issue in 1994 and didn't do it because they had conventional capabilities, namely artillery, that could hit the capital of South Korea, Seoul, which is not that far from the border with North Korea. And so even then, already, they could kill potentially tens, maybe even over 100,000 South Koreans in the opening days of a war. And that was enough to deter us. We just were not going to attack given that fact. So one could argue that he's sort of buying a lot of extra deterrence here. We were already deterred, but now we're even more deterred. But they seem to feel that that's necessary, and that's the direction they're going.
The new South Korean president, just elected earlier this year, is pushing for engagement with North Korea rather than a policy of confrontation. Do you think President Moon is going to stand by that given this new development? And where does that put him in relation to other allies?
I'm sorry, there's a little beeping there. I think it must be a thunderstorm warning. He may try to stand by that. The problem with that is that that policy has been tried back in the 1990s, leading up to 2000, most prominently by the Prime Minister Kim Dae-jung, who was famous for the so-called Sunshine Policy of cooperation with the North, trying to build economic ties, trying to build human ties, people going back and forth, things like that, with the idea that we want to reassure North Korea and build trust and cooperation gradually rather than threaten North Korea. And so that policy was tried. It was given a pretty fair try, and there were some joint economic programs and factories and whatnot, and tourism going back and forth a little bit. But the fundamental problem is that the North Korean regime can't really survive as a normal country because they are so heavily overshadowed by South Korea. South Korea is so much more successful than North Korea that it's really, once the North Korean people figure out that basically they've been starved and lied to for the past 50 years, the North Korean leadership fears, I think correctly, that there's going to be hell to pay. And so they have to maintain secrecy. They have to maintain an informational blockade against what life is really like in South Korea. So there's a real limit to how open they're ever going to be and what, you know, what they might be willing to do in terms of cooperation with the South. And it later came out that even the big triumphs of the Sunshine Policy era were essentially bought and paid for by the South Korean government. They essentially bribed the North Koreans to have summit meetings with them and to open these industrial parks and things like that. So it was not as benign a picture as it was portrayed as.
And just briefly as we wrap up, Andrew, what do you think will be the likely reaction from the global community to this most recent North Korean missile test?
I think you're going to get more of the same. I mean, I don't think the international the problem is that the international community doesn't have a lot of leverage here because North Korea is so intensely isolated already. There's really not that much more that can be done in the way of peaceful tools, even including economic sanctions. Not many countries have any links to North Korea, so it really is down to China in terms of the country that could have leverage. But the problem with China is, of course, they don't want to exert too much leverage. They don't want to threaten the North Korean regime too much because they're worried that it would collapse, and that would be bad for China because then South Korea would essentially take over with the United States troops right away.
And we lost Andrew, but thank you, Andrew, so much for being with us today. That was Andrew Kidd, professor in the Department of Political Science at UW-Madison. He joined us to talk about the news that North Korea recently successfully tested a long-range missile with the potential to reach the coast of Alaska.